Following is a talk recorded at the 12th Kentucky State AA Conference in Lexington, Kentucky in 1963. The speaker, Bill, is Howard Benhoff, and undoubtedly you have a number of talks by Howard. I don't remember exactly how long he'd been in AA, but I believe he had become a trustee of AA just prior to his death. It is a fairly short talk, running about 40-some minutes, just about 40 minutes, and I'll put it in here, even though you may have a number of Howard's talks.
To you, poor, normal individuals, good evening. And to you, my brothers and sisters under the chin, isn't it wonderful to be sober? I submit that question to myself quite often in order that I remember the contrast between the end result of the Benhoff system of thinking and living and this system of thinking and living called AA. The Benhoff, by the way, is my last name. And the way to remember that is to remember that this is the guy that's been off all his life. And as far as West Richfield, my friend, it is in Summit County, about 20 miles south of Cleveland. I lived there for about 12 years, and I moved back to Cleveland. So, if you're up around that way, you can find me a lot easier looking in the phone book in Cleveland. Folks, when we just begin to think about whether or not we have a problem, I believe that is the time when happiness, good times, are beginning to be removed from whatever drinking experiences we might have. I'm inclined to think that most people drank the way I did. In other words, we started out and we didn't go to jail and we didn't smash up cars. We had fun. I had more fun than a barrel of monkeys with a mile of clothesline, at least. And you know, my mother didn't wait up for me at night, and I paid my bills, and I was dependable, I was on the job on time, and drinking was not a problem. I loved it. I loved the smell of it. I loved the effect. I even liked beer when it came down a second time through your nose. Remember how that used to be? And it was wonderful that as time went on, and with me it was pretty rapid, because I started kind of young. I was about 14, and I was always a big kid, and I drove a car when I was 13 years old. I had a job driving a truck when I was 15. This is in the summer vacation on Saturdays. I was going to high school. But I was associated with older people. It seemed like older people and booze were together. And I got along fine. But by the time I was 21 years old, I knew I didn't drink like other people. And I was beginning to have these doubts of sanity. Remember how I used to wake up in the morning after the night before, and like a jigsaw puzzle, you'd start to put things together and a few component parts, and they'd start to take shape. But long before the puzzle was completed, you'd say to yourself, "Oh my God, I must be going nuts." And you say to yourself, "I'll never drink again. This is the end." And then before the sun goes down that day, you're in the bag again. Remember? Say, "I want to know if I'm in the right place or not." Is there anybody in this room that claims to be an alcoholic and a member of AA who came here that was not in trouble? Will you please raise your hand? Turn around and count them, will you? Not a one. Isn't that funny? I've asked that question before hundreds of groups, and never have I had anybody raise their hand and tell me that they came here and they weren't in trouble. Well, now, what kind of trouble were we in? This business of doubting your sanity in the morning, that's bad, isn't it? And when the phone rings, you answered, I'm not here. That's kind of bad, isn't it? You know? And you don't want to go to the mailbox because you know what's there. If you were like me, they were from finance companies. You know, send in the dough or we'll send out the van. Well, I wasn't in much trouble. I was in the clutches of three of those finance companies. And they had mortgages on the furniture. The same furniture. But the furniture was sold. I don't know how it is in Kentucky, but that's bad in Ohio. This is the kind of trouble. You know what I mean? The kind of trouble you wouldn't dare mention anybody else that you might have a problem drinking. But you doubt your sanity and you can't live and you can't die and you can't sleep. You got to be in the bag in order to go to sleep at night. You know, in 42, they kicked me out of the Army. You see, I had a very extensive career. I was inducted on a Thursday morning and Saturday at noon, the same week I was back home in Cleveland. They didn't even give me a uniform. All they gave me was blood and urine tests and found out I was an alcoholic. And a doctor said, if I were you, I'd never drink again. You're going to wind up with a wet brain. You know, that kind of scared me. But I couldn't go back to Cleveland and tell those folks I was an alcoholic. But by the time the bus got me there, I had an alibi. I told them that I was scheduled for officer's training school, but it was filled up and I'd have to wait 3-4 weeks. And then that time went by and the people were saying, well, when are you going back in that Army? And then I told them very confidentially that I was in Secret Service. If they had caught me on that one, I'd have been in jail yet. You know that. But you see, this is the way we get involved. At least this is the way I was involved. There was no more fun drinking. At a time while I was drinking, I thought maybe if I just slowed down. Remember how you used to try to slow down? Wasn't that a joke? In 1936, I quit for 3 weeks. I didn't even have a teaspoon full of beer. And then I knew I could take it or leave it. The worst thing ever happened to me. Because when I really tried to quit and I found out I couldn't, I was really in bad shape. Well, you know what that is. And so, after this attempt to sober up by myself, and when I came back from the Army, I went to work for the Aluminum Company of America as a plumber's helper. I figured I'd get all tired out and I wouldn't have to be half-gassed in order to go to sleep at night. Well, you know, that didn't work. And couple of weeks of that, and this was hard-earned money, believe me, that I had forgotten where to get a check cashed. I thought it was only in the saloon. I forgot all about banks and grocery stores you can get a check cashed. And this time I took my hard-earned money and I put it on the bar, and this Romanian saloon keeper, he couldn't even laugh in English. He takes my money and gives me the change after I told him to take out the bar bill, and he said, Ben Huff, I hope you never quit drinking. This is awful. Here, this guy can't even laugh in English. He goes to Florida in a big Cadillac, and the All-American stays up in Cleveland eating snowballs. You know, of all the people that admonished me and bawled me out and did everything else, telling me I drank too much and all, it didn't seem to mean a thing. All the lousy catastrophes that I went through in my life, the loss of opportunities and money and reputation and everything else, it didn't hurt me as much as that. And to make a long story short, this was about the last push before I got into AA. Because the following week, I was drunker than a monkey. I'm home, I don't know what side is up, and the next morning, the first time in 10 years, I ordered a morning drink. Now you say, well, what kind of a drunk could he be? He didn't have a morning drink in 10 years. Well, folks, when I was 21, I knew I didn't drink like other people. And I was talking to alcoholics then. Alcoholics who came into my ex-uncle's saloon at 17th and Hamilton. This is a block away from Wayfarer's Lodge in Cleveland. This is where there's a floating population of 2,400 human derelicts. 2,399 and a half of my say are alcoholics. And I was asking questions to these people. This was in the bootlegging days. And one thing they told me, if you ever drink in the morning, you're on the skids but fast. And the other thing was an impression they gave me. It can't happen to me. This is what has been in every man's mind that ever came to AA. This has been in every man's mind that ever went to Skid Row. It can't happen to me. But it did. And I knew it was going to happen to me. So I shut the morning drink off. I thought this was evidence that I wasn't going to wind up on Skid Row. But this particular morning in 1942, when I ordered my first morning drink, this was the last barrier between me and the life of a bum. And I didn't want to be a bum. I shoved the shot aside and I made contact with Alcoholics Anonymous. And by the grace of God and the help of you people, that was the last attempt that I ever made for a drink. I went to my first AA meeting that night. It was the 15th day of July of 42, and I haven't had anything stronger than coffee since. But the nicest part of it all is this. I was restored to the human race and restored to God. Now, some of you might shy. I might talk a little bit about God more than you want. But if you take a look at the paragraph where it states we agnostic, it will go on to say that this is a program that we're going to talk about God. And folks, without God, I couldn't be here. Because it's through you, He worked to help me. I went to a lot of meetings and I heard people say, ever so many times, and you'll hear it almost every meeting, you gotta go to a meeting, gotta go to a meeting. Most important thing, gotta go to a meeting. This wasn't enough for me. I had to know why. And when I found out why, to my own satisfaction, it amounts to this much. Unless I go to meetings, I am not available. Available to receive the help that I need. From a power greater than myself called God. He never came down, sat in my lap, whispered in my ear, told me a thing. But He does work through you people. He communicates through you to me so that I know how to live without food. And when I'm in a meeting, I'm available. If He sees fit, He can use me to help someone else. And I believe, seriously, folks, this is one of the most important factors in anybody's sobriety. It's this willingness to come to AA, admitting that our system of thinking and living is not so hot. Admitting that we need booze to sleep. We need booze to live with ourselves. And we get so sick and tired of being sick and tired, we've got evidence, proof positive, that we just don't know how to do this job well. And when we come to this point that we surrender to the idea that we're not so hot, we don't want to drink, we come to AA, and what do we find? A peace of mind and a sense of well-being that's beyond human comprehension. Oh, in the first few meetings I came to AA, and people would say, money means nothing to me anymore, and I'd say, oh, if they only knew how much I owed. Yeah, and I come to these meetings, you know, and I listen to these red-nosed rangers talk about God. Ooh, I'd shiver and I'd shake, but I'd say, my God, they're sober. And I'm going to hang on. And I like this contrast. And you know, I look at AA as a great big circle. On the outside, the drunks are still suffering, you know. And then Benhoff broke through. And he got into that area between the outer circle and the inner circle. You know that area when you're new and the band is playing? Isn't that wonderful? Oh, it's tremendous. Total strangers going out of their way, paying attention to you, and saying, this is Howard Benhoff, he's a new man, I want you to talk to him. My gosh, all my life I wanted to be the center of attention, and I never was. I thought you had to buy booze to do that. I come to AA because I don't want to drink, and I'm the center of attention. Isn't that wonderful? Total strangers picking me up, taking me to meetings, calling me up, seeing her. Well, they didn't call me after the phone was jerked out. But I did get a phone after a while. And you know, it's just wonderful. But here's what happened. This is what happened to me. After I'm in about 2, 3, 4 months, and a few more drunks broke through, and they got into that area, and you know, these AAs, they started to pay attention to these new boys, and I wasn't getting so much attention. And I didn't like it either.
You didn't either, did you, remember?
And after a lot of time, you find fault with the coffee, and you find fault with the ventilation, and you find fault with the speakers, and by golly, I found fault with the big book. It's about time to rewrite it. After all, this is 42, you know? And I'm going to rewrite that book, but nobody else thought it was a good idea. But I got to thinking, well, doggone it, I know how to stay sober, and I also know how to get drunk, and I don't have to go to these meetings unless these birds tell me how to get drunk and how to get in trouble. That's one thing we all know before we get here, is how to get drunk and how to get in trouble. But you see, I didn't take in consideration that these people had been drinking for 25, 30 years, and some of them only sober 3, 4 weeks. What were they going to talk about? Thing they were doing for 25 years, something they've been doing for 3 weeks. Well, naturally, they talked about their drinking. Like this one fellow said he was in and out of paddy wagon so often he got round shoulder. Well, yeah, that same guy, I'll never forget, I want to tell you this story. We were down in Nassau a couple of years ago. We took a boat over to Hog Island, you know, Paradise Beach, and we're laying on the beach there in our bathing suits, and we act like we had money too, you know, what's the difference? And this guy hollers out so everybody can hear, "Hey, Bernhoff!" I said, "What do you want?" He said, "This sure beats the workhouse, doesn't it?" Hellfire, anything will beat the workhouse. But these are the kind of people you meet in AA. At least I met a lot of them. And then, you know, I stayed away, see? I figured I'll lead a decent Christian-like life, and I'll earn this right to get this power that I need from this soul supply of help from Almighty God, and I'll be all right. And so that's what I did. And I quit the job of the Luhlman Company, went back on the road, and, well, I stayed sober, but my gosh, it's like taking a bath with your shoes on, you know, just staying sober. And so I heard so much about, I remember so much about this peace of mind and sense of well-being that I heard while I was in AA, and I thought, well, I better go back. See what I missed, and what kind of people are they? Now, mind you, I didn't drink. I was lucky. I was sober a whole year now, so I came back to AA to find out who these people were. What kind of people are they? And this is what I found out, and this is what makes AA people different from anybody or any other group that I know. The men and women who stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous year after year after year without interruption are the people whose motives and intentions you cannot doubt. You might not like what they do. You might not like what they say. You might not like the way they do it or the way they say it. But the fact that they're staying sober, this is proof that their intentions and their motives must be proper and honest. And you know, when you dig a little deeper and you figure out, now just what did I do to warrant this break? To allow me to come to AA? Well, of course, a lot of people say we're here because we're not all there. Well, that's right, too, you know. And then there's others that say we drank too much, too often, too long. Well, that's a good reason. And there's others that say because you couldn't live with yourself and you use booze to dull your conscience and use booze to take yourself out of a world of reality and put yourself in a world of fictitious values, a world of fantasy. Well, this is true. But what did we do to qualify us, to warrant this wonderful opportunity to be restored to the human race and to God? What did you do? Just give yourself a good think about that sometime. And you know, I think you'll come up like most of them, say nothing. Well, how come, since the beginning of time, they've had an alcoholic problem? You look in the Bible and it states where they fought over the land and made the best grapes make the best wine. They had alkies back then again, you know, they had trouble. And Noah had a problem. He'd maybe been the first AA that had been around then. But anyhow, When you think about it and you say, my gosh, and nothing happened until 1935. The best that medical science and religion could boast of in the way of rehabilitation for the alcoholic was 2 out of 100. 2 out of 100. And then you say, oh my gosh, where'd the other 98 go? Well, I submit to you, they went to a drunkard's grave. Where else could they go? And you know, you can go to a drunkard's grave with $1 million in each pocket. And that is a very good place, you know that? You look in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10. You know what it says there? Oh, I don't want to make it look bad. But you're not a drunk, so you wouldn't understand. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10, it states specifically, those who will not enter the kingdom of God. And you know who's included? Drunkards. They'll even watch upstairs if you're drinking. What do you think of that? You know, one thing, when you're drinking, a drunk won't trust a drunk. Isn't that right? You don't even trust yourself. But anyhow, we're taking a look at this question, why am I here? How come? What makes me eligible? And then you think about all the people you went to school with that went to a drunkard's grave. They're already gone. How about those relatives of yours? I don't know whether you've got any, but most of us had relatives that had an alcoholic problem. They're not here anymore. If they were here, they might be here in AA with us, alive and sober. Instead of that, they're gone. And then you ask yourself, how come it happened to me? How come I'm here? A lot of people are worse off than I was, and they're never going to get to AA. How come right in this town, right tonight? I'll bet you there's 1,000 people suffering from alcoholism, suffered worse than any one of us in this room. They'll never set foot in an AA meeting room. How come? How come you and I are here? There must be only one answer, as far as I see it, by the grace of God. And you know, when you look a little further and you say to yourself, this AA program is pretty nice. There's a lot of things about it. It helps me live a decent life and live an enjoyable life and a happy life. And we talk about our last half of the 12th tradition. It states there where we put principles above personalities. You know, I think this is one of the sections of our program that we should get just as fast as we can. Because we're the kind of people that get burned up real fast, don't we? We're going to blow our stack. We're going to get mad. And we start to blow our stack and we gossip and everything else. Why? Because of people. You know, people made problems. If it wasn't for people, there wouldn't be any problems. Isn't that right? Now, if you're God's choice and I'm God's choice, the other guy's God's choice, we're all here, we're all God's choices, a good question to ask ourselves every once in a while, how do you get along with his choices? Next time you're ready to blow your stack, try to remove from the situation the people that are there. And when you take the people out, you take out the hatred and the animosity and all these negative currents that burn you up. And you know what happens? You level off, and the first thing you know, you got a clear mind, you got a much better chance of coming up with the right answer to that particular problem. You know, blowing our stacks, this is one thing that alcoholics can't afford. We're not the kind of people that can act like anybody else and then return to normalcy right away. No, I'm not. And I don't think I'm much different than a lot of other people. Now, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the only thing they assured me is if I followed this program to the best of my individual ability, one day at a time, I'd stay sober. They didn't promise me a Cadillac at the end of 5 years. They didn't promise me an equity in a home at the end of 10. Nothing. Suggested 12 steps. And you know what it does? It eliminates the necessity for drink. Now, you and I understand that. But there are a lot of people that go back and they try to figure out what made you drink. And was it because your grandmother twisted her ankle when she was 32 or whatever it was, you know? Well, I know why I drank. AA taught me. If you follow the fourth, you follow the 10th steps of inventory, and you follow the 11th, the one that gives you the opportunity to develop in the spiritual realm, through prayer and meditation, we seek to improve our conscious contact with God. Praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. By golly, when you work on those three, of course, the other nine are very important. You can't do it without any of the 12. But those three, I certainly believe, we work on them, we find out why we drink. And you know when you find out why you drink. This is just like throwing fish in a barrel from now on. You know that area that I talked about where the band is playing? This is the area, you know, when you're new and the contrast is there and the miracle of AA is taking hold already. You're already walking around sore. You got to pinch yourself three times a day to see if it's really you. And then these other things start to unfold and you begin to find out why this AA is no different than what my folks gave me before I ever went to grammar school. It doesn't conflict with my religion. It doesn't conflict with anything that any teacher ever gave me. And you say to yourself, why are these rascals, they just come in another door to teach me how to live with myself and to live without booze. And then we find out, we're not fighting booze anymore. We find out that this isn't a struggle to keep away from a beer on a hot summer afternoon. You don't think like I used to think, I'd say about my mother, I'd say to myself, she's 62 years old, and she could take a cold bottle of beer on a hot summer afternoon. Here I am, 31, I can't even take a thimbleful. This is awful, sacrifice. My father's cousin, 84 years old, he could drink beer and booze all night long, play pinochle, and he never bent a fender in his life. And me, as much as I loved to drink and it had to be denied me, I couldn't drink anymore with safety. Oh, but after a while, and this thing unfolds, and you begin to see that this is a blessing in disguise. How many people get the second chance to live? Alcoholism, a blessing in disguise. AA, the vehicle by which we'll return to society. And you know what takes place? That big cat, that big black cat gets off your shoulder. And you say to yourself, I don't have to drink anymore. You don't have to drink anymore. This is another miracle of AA. Oh, to go on fighting booze the rest of my life? No, not me. Howard Benhoff couldn't do it. He wouldn't want to live that way. But now, all of the truths that were given to me by my parents and by my teachers are meaningful. Honesty is the best policy. Ooh, that was awesome. I come from a neighborhood where there's nothing but Sharpies on the lower west side of Cleveland. They made more money in one day than I'd make in 3 weeks. The bootleggers, hijackers, they worked for the girls. They did everything illegal. And I'd envy them. They'd meet these Chrysler Roadsters and $15 silk shirts and $20 pointed shoes. Boy, I looked at them, you know. I'm getting $25 a week. These things all look good to me. I remember the pool room that I used to shoot pools on the 25th of rain. It was right near a college, and we'd take the boys' money away during the day, and then at night we'd try to take it away from each other. And the cops had come down the stairs, and we just dropped a cue, go over the wall. Stand frisk, if they didn't find a cannon on you or a knife big enough to roll a bolt, you could go back and shoot pool. And then I come to AA and I find these people. The first meeting I went to, I don't remember what the speaker said, I don't even remember who he is, but there's some things that I'll never forget. One thing, these birds got my number and I've got theirs. We got to start dealing from the top of the deck. And believe me, that's true. Another thing, the look on the wives' faces. Not one of worry, not one of doubt, one of confidence, and one of happiness. The old man's bleached out and he's coming home with ringer pays. Why shouldn't they be happy? These are the beginnings. These are the miracles that take place immediately. Then after several months and several years, and this personality change takes place. This is miraculous. The most dubious individual that ever came to AA can't be around 3 weeks without having a change in his system of thinking and living. Because there are too many nice things that happen. He cannot continue to classify as coincidental. He begins to believe. Because there are too many of these things that are not coincidental. He can't continue to classify that way. And when a person once believes that it is by the grace of God, that through him and him alone do we get this help. This is not a program that you've got to fight.
This is not a case of, well, I gotta go to an AA meeting tonight. Or my spouse will raise hell tomorrow. You go because you want to go. I was up in Sarnia, Canada a couple of weeks ago, and one of the fellows there said, this is wonderful in this regard, if nothing else. The things that you did and you said several years ago, even several months ago, didn't bother you then. You can't do them now. Your conscience has become that much sharper. The road gets narrower, but it gets nicer. Isn't that true? It gets narrower, but it gets nicer. And then when you go to these meetings, and you find the people that are staying sober year after year after year without interruption. You know, 2 minutes, you think you know them for 25 years. They got your number, you've got theirs. Isn't that true? And so, people who go to AA year after year, I know they're not the kind of people that kid themselves and have a good time. Alcoholics by nature aren't that way. We become realists. And we know from our experience before AA that we cannot drink with safety. And there's always enough coming in that prove that. You see, I always take this stand. There are enough people in AA to take a postgraduate course in boozeology to prove to me that I can't drink with safety either. Of course, I don't think we need as many as we've got. But there'll always be enough around. And it's their head that hits the brick wall, and it's their head that bleeds and hurts, proving to me that if I do it, the same thing will happen to me. And you know, after we get into this inner circle, where we know we don't have to drink, this is when we guard and protect this position with everything we've got. We know. This is our last chance. There won't be any more. I know that if I want to stay sober tomorrow, I can do it the same tomorrow as I did for the last 20 I have here. And I know that God isn't going to turn his back on me. I know how to stay sober, and you know how to stay sober. All we must have is that desire, to maintain that desire to stay sober. What did we have when we first come in? Desire. That's all. Some of us had hope. I had hope. I had hope that I could be like my sponsor. Cleaned up and changed with pretend in my pocket. Get those garnishments off my back. That's what I was hoping for, but I had a desire to stay sober. And this is all that's required. And isn't it odd? With all of this, just this desire, we come to AA, and what happens the first week? We stay sober. And then the second week comes by, and we stay sober. And the second month, and the second year. Isn't it reasonable to believe, then, that we'll stay sober as long as we live? Why, certainly. But how come some of us, we don't stay sober to the end of our life? How come that a man can stay sober the first week, the second month, the second year, and then start to drink at the end of 10 years or 15 years? I maintain it's because he lost his desire. His desire to stay sober. Certainly after the end of 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, you certainly ought to know more about yourself, the program, and alcoholism. But have more ground to stand on. Don't have a firmer foundation than you did the first week. This is true. It's logical. But upstairs, when this thing changes, our desire to stay sober, a lot of things can enter over a period of time. You know, some of us, we come into AA. Well, we can go to meetings 7 nights a week because where else could we go? Who else would want us? That's why I could go to meetings 7 nights a week. Nobody else wanted us.
And you know, you take on the appearance of someone that's stable and dependable, and a little time goes by, and the boys at the shop, they begin to look at you, and see you there every day, they're thinking straight. Well, if they don't make a steward out of you, the company will make a foreman out of you. You know what I mean? It begins to look like you're dependable. And then some of us, we find our way back to church. We're there every Sunday. And instead of giving that tribute to the film keeper, we give the preacher the little bit. And the people begin to notice, and they say, you better make a deacon. You look pretty good. And so, we're either a foreman or a steward at the shop, or a deacon in the church, and even the Boy Scouts. Their daddy just started up at us, and he did something with that, and then somebody was throwing us the lines with the same people. Man, he's a good man. They were making fun of him, you know. All of these things, we didn't think some of the time, you know. I'm speaking from the straight stage. And there was a time came when something had to give. Because I was on this committee and that committee, I was an officer of this, an officer of that, a member of this, a member of that. I was a joiner when I was drinking. I got to be a joiner after I sobered up, too. I thought I needed my life rounded out, you know? This is where a lot of people think and get off the main subject. That's wrong. My main purpose in life right now is to stay sober. I hope it'll always be that way, because without sobriety, nothing else counts. Every single responsibility in my life that I'll ever assume, is predicated on my sobriety, and my sobriety is predicated on my overflow. I can't do that without you people. I can't do that without being invaded or seized. You see something here to do. And it was my year, and it's my retirement. And some of these things, and others are retiring from office, and just a member of all the time. You know, not the main one there, but I might think from my grandma's perspective. This position where I know what a show of hands is going to be. Not that I got it, maybe. But I know I don't have to think anymore, and I know I can stay sober as long as I want to stay sober. God is giving me this opportunity. And I thank him that he left me with enough buttons out there that I could comprehend this special program. This is not an easy program for those who are not willing to surrender. That you surrender to the idea that you're just going to be a man, I get it. And you can't make the safety. It's not a year. Not only do you learn how to live without food, but you learn how to live with people. You learn how to live with friends. And you know, everyone seems to stay in this food. For some reason or other, when adversity comes our way, we help. And with others, prosperity seems to be the first. When we've got something to start, when we've got someone that we're sponsoring, we want to have such family to have them restored to the society that we got. We just don't have time for the better food. And it seems that all of the things that other people place their dollar sign behind, well, certainly we don't have to be sold with any kind of nice surprise in this time. These things are secondary. We're striving constantly to share with others this wonderful blessing that came our way when we took such an appreciation. This is the joy, this is the coupon that we get. And how did this come about? We admit we didn't earn the right to come into this society. If it was left to the standards of men, most of us would never get into AA. In fact, if it was left to the standards of men, most of us would have stayed in AA. That's true. I remember one time I was going to Buffalo with a fellow, and like we do, we were talking together an hour and a half, 2 hours at a time. And I made the question. I don't know how that guy stayed sober. He did it 20 years ago. I never said that again. It isn't none of my business. And so what happened? We had more fun, downright happiness, real pleasure, sharing in AA than our fondest expectations and hopes would even permit.
People in AA, year after year after year,
they don't kid themselves in having a good time. They know this is the McCoy. They're willing to guard and protect this position with everything they've got. They don't find it. And how did this all come about? There's only one way I can look. This came from an ever-loving God. He didn't see in us what we see in each other. He saw in us a vehicle by which we could prove to thousands and thousands of others that there is a God. But mainly, this is my belief. He loved us so that we could love you. Thank you.